Blog Talk Radio.
Up every
Good evening to everyone that's joined us at the Wise Women Media, the radio show. I wanted to remind everybody that you can check us out online at wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com. At the website there in the blog, we have a list of our sponsors, so I'm just going to run through them quickly. Daughters of Isis, Florida Nature Photos, Here Be Monsters on Blog Talk Radio, Power New Media and Public Relations, Roundtree 7, Tarot and Stars, and the Hoodoo blog, and we can't forget the Common Project Network. Both them and Here Be Monsters give us our space every week so we can broadcast this show. As I have said before, please check us out online at the blog at wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com. You'll see a GoFundMe link, and we are not corporate. We are not corporate sponsored. We do not have funding. So the listeners, the independent listeners, that's you, are the ones who help keep this show going. So no amount is too small. Just hit us up there. It can be $5, $10, $20, whatever you can afford. As I said before, too, we are going to be covering what is Samhain and what is Halloween and what are the two of them and why there's such a different take on both of those. They're really the one and the same holiday. And we already know that Halloween has a bad rap because it's become very commercial, and it's almost like the stepping stone in the holiday before the big one, which is Yuletide or Christmas, which of course is more commercial than any other holiday. Usually when you go into the stores, you can find most of the Christmas decorations coming out even before the Halloween ones do or simultaneously. The extreme commercialism to the point where the meaning of the holiday itself is lost. Samhain is the ancient Celtic name for the holiday, which took place on the cross-quarter days, usually the first full moon after, I think it's the sun, yeah, the sun goes into Scorpio. Actually, it would be that transit, the sun going into Scorpio. So it's definitely tied astrologically. And that happens anywhere from the last week of October to the first week of November. And it's called a cross-quarter date. So Halloween or Samhain is not always on October 31st. The dates do change, and it is an astrological point in time. It was considered the Celtic New Year, and one of the most significant things about this particular holiday was a need fire was built. All the fires in the villages in the ancient Celtic times would be extinguished, and then there'd be a need fire put in the middle of the village, and all fires would then be lit. All torches would be lit from that fire and rekindled in the different homes throughout the village. So this was an important ceremony. This was just part of the ceremony for the Celtic New Year. So we're going to challenge our thinking tonight and look at the differences, maybe some of the differences, and the traditions of Halloween / Samhain, and why it really is all one holiday, but how in so many people's minds and just knowledge of it, of the real meaning of the holiday, it's become commercial. It's become buy your costumes, buy your candy. The kids go door to door for candy. There's a reason for that too. During Samhain, the veil between our world and the other world is thin, and it has always been considered a time where spirits, those spirits of the people that have gone on before us to the other side, are able to go between the worlds, between the two worlds, this world and theirs. Therefore, a lot of people that are really in tune and in vibe with the spirit world are able to pick up messages from the dead or from the loved ones that have passed on. So this is a perfect time of the year because of that to honor those that have gone before us, a lot of times around these need fires and around our own altars in our own homes, this is the time of the year where we take our pictures out of our dead parents or aunts or grandparents. We put them on the altar and we remember those people that we loved. So it's a very, very sacred time of the year in addition to being a harvest time of the year. So we do have a caller from 918 area code, so I'm going to click this person in. 918 area code, can you give us your name and where you're calling from and any questions?
My name's Angela. I'm calling from the Midwest. My older daughter, we've been celebrating the Day of the Dead, which I believe is November 1st. And her father was from Mexico. How does that tie in with Samhain and Halloween? And I mean, I know the basics that they are honoring their loved ones. And it's a beautiful, in our where we live, downtown, it's a beautiful celebration. It's definitely, it's nothing that's like trick-or-treat-ish at all. It's very solemn, very.
That's really the same holiday, but in Mexico and other South American and Central American countries, and even the Caribbean, it is the same date where you're honoring the ancestors. Only a lot of
and we have altars, things like that.
Yeah, the Roman Catholics and other Christian religions took that date, you know, and adopted it for their own and really made November.
They just changed the day then.
Yeah, they just
appropriated
it.
What difference does 12 hours make? You know, just, wow.
Yeah, and they made it
it
was All Souls Day in the Catholic Church, still is on November 1st. So, and
well, I knew about All Souls Day, but I didn't know Day of the Dead that they were the same thing. But as you were mentioning, like putting pictures of loved ones that passed on the mantle or the altar, you know, that really hit home. I'm like, wow, that's just like what we do.
What I like about the Day of the Dead celebrations is the really incredible artwork
yes.
Some of the things that I've seen that have been done in Mexico. We used to have a Mexican restaurant here in Tampa where I'm broadcasting from. It was Viva La Frida's was the name of it. And it was a restaurant that was based on Frida Kahlo's artwork.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always decorated like it was the Day of the Dead because for some reason Frida Kahlo had a real attachment to that festival herself, and she was from Mexico City.
This is
so
in Tulsa.
It was really an interesting
in
restaurant, and they served very, you know, upscale Mexican food.
Right.
It was just really incredible to go in there and see the artwork. So, and you'll see that in a lot of the Caribbean traditions as well, like Candomblé and Santeria, and this is a very sacred holiday for almost all of those religions, but the Christians, including the Catholics, took that day and appropriated it for their own, even though it has very deep pagan ties and has for many, many hundreds of years, so even before Christ. So, so it's interesting. And also another clue to the dead thing is the fact that this was also the time where sacrifice was made at the fire, and Christians thinking that this was pagan, of course it was, but when these need fires were built in the Celtic part of the world, which was most of Northern Europe and, you know, the British Isles, anybody that determined that they were too old or too sickly to make it through the winter would walk into the fire. There's historical references to that. They did
like
that.
Like firework
not,
walkers? Or?
Yeah, well, they didn't do it because it was a religious sacrifice, per se. They did it for the survival of their tribe. For their people.
I see. So, okay. Well, that does make sense.
It makes sense. And any cattle or farm animal that was determined too weak or too sickly to make it through the winter would be sacrificed. And that was why there was like a huge amount of feasting at that time as well. So it all ties in, and it's just a very sacred time of the year. And I feel the veil, actually. I feel the thin veil. So it's almost like I've been having a communication with my mother over the past couple days. And so I feel it coming every year. And I can tell just by where the sun is and where it's setting that it's this time of the year, because it almost turns golden, like the need fires.
Right.
So it's very, very, very cool to have those associations. But I want to thank you for calling, and anybody out there that's celebrating, you know, the Day of the Dead, November 1st, you're celebrating the same holiday. It doesn't matter what you call it, but it's the same vibe, and it's the same holiday.
It's wonderful, and they have it downtown, and some of the brick buildings, they paint on the sides of the brick buildings, these beautiful masterpieces. I don't know what else you can call them there. And they're a memorial of someone precious to the artist. And
wow,
so
that's
moving.
Cool. And I'm
so
sure,
moving.
Yeah, I'm sure they do stuff like this in any kind of where there's a large, you know, Hispanic population, like even in Miami and places like that. I'm sure that there's
similar. We're in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and Latinos are the number one minority, followed by Native Americans, then African Americans.
Right.
So we have
a
strong ethnic community, but I mean, it just touches every. I mean, you see everybody there. It's moving.
Right.
Definitely a moving ceremony.
Well,
thank you for calling.
I appreciate your input into the show.
I was just wondering about the Day of the Dead as you were talking. I was listening.
Yeah.
My two daughters are wanting to learn how to cast spells and wanting to know more about it, and we homeschool, so
there are some books, one in particular by Starhawk, I think it's called Circle Bound.
I like Starhawk. I've read one book, Spiral something. It was a couple of years ago.
Yeah,
that's the one.
But she does one specifically for kids called Circle Round, and I would check that book
Circle Round.
Yeah, and use that for
the kids.
They
probably have that at the library, I bet. I bet they do.
They probably do.
Circle Round.
Yeah, so thank you so much, and you have a wonderful Samhain.
You as well. If you don't mind, just put me on mute so I can listen.
Oh, sure. Thanks.
Okay, thanks.
Bye. Okay, and that was a caller with a great, great question. And let me go ahead and I'm going to play us a little bit of music before I go on to the next little bit of our show. This is S.J. Tucker and Firebird's Child.
I am the Firebird. I am his daughter. I am the Firebird's Child.
I am the Firebird.
I am his daughter. And like the flame, I am wild, 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 wild. I am the Firebird. I am his daughter. I am the Firebird's Child.
I am the Firebird's
Child. I am the Firebird, the song you've ever heard. Join in the dance and make it wild, wild, wild. Join in the dance and make it wild. To see a maiden dance around the fire is not so strange, but fire dances around the limbs of this uncommon maid. Be brave enough to burn.
You've ever heard. Join in the dance and make it wild, 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 wild.
sandals on forever.
So the first song we heard was S.J. Tucker, Firebird's Child, and that last song was The Elemental Chant by Wendy Rule from Australia. Great, great song, and she's got some wonderful music out there. If you take a look at any of her recordings, just incredible stuff. So I'm going to go into a description of what Samhain is. Halloween, or Samhain, had its beginnings in an ancient pre-Christian Celtic festival of the dead. The Celtic people, who were once found all over Europe, surprisingly even in France, parts of Italy, Spain, and Eastern Europe as well, divided the year by the four major holidays at that time, and they were very linked in. As I said, cross-quarter days, they were astrological points in time because there were no written calendars. So basically for the people of the ancient days, their calendar was the movement of the sun, the movement of the stars. So they could tell time, and they could tell what time of the year it was by what they were seeing in nature. So the four major holidays were also considered the four fire festivals, and Samhain was one of those, being the Celtic New Year. The other four holidays of their year were the season changes. So those would be the equinoxes and the solstices, the equinoxes being the spring and the fall, and the solstices being the winter and the summer. So according to their calendar, the year began on a day corresponding to November 1st on our present calendar. And like I said, that's whatever day the sun was going into the sign of Scorpio. The date marked the beginning of winter for them. Since they were a pastoral people, it was a time when cattle and sheep had to be moved to closer pastures and all livestock had to be secured for the winter months. Crops were harvested and stored at that time, and the date marked both an ending and a beginning of the eternal cycle. The festival observed at this time, called Samhain, was the biggest and most significant holiday of the Celtic year. The Celts believed that at that time of Samhain, more so than any other time of the year, the ghosts of the dead were able to mingle with the living. The veil became thin because at Samhain, the souls of those who had died during the year traveled into the other world. People gathered to sacrifice animals, fruits, and vegetables. They also lit the bonfires in honor of the dead, the need fires, to aid them on their journey and to keep them away from the living. On that day, all manner of beings were abroad, ghosts, fairies, and demons, all part of the dark and the dread. So the light and dark, both. Samhain became the Halloween that we are familiar with when Christian missionaries attempted to change the religious practices of the Celtic people while they were trying to proselytize and convert them. In the early centuries of the first millennium after Christ's death, before missionaries such as St. Patrick and St. Columcille converted them to Christianity, the Celts practiced an elaborate religion through their priestly caste, the Druids, who were priests, poets, scientists, and scholars. And they were even doctors because they were well-trained in herbal medicines. As religious leaders, ritual specialists, and bearers of learning, the Druids were not unlike the very missionaries and monks who were to later Christianize their people and brand them evil devil worshipers. We're going to leave that right there and go on to the next song. This is one of my favorite Samhain songs. This is called All Souls Night by Lorena McKennett.
Thank you. Shine.
That was a beautiful song by Hecate's Wheel, the music and lyrics by my friend Vicky Scotty. They're a local band out of Clearwater. Absolutely stunning song, one of my favorites that they do. And the song that I played before that was All Souls Night by Lorena McKinnitt. So let's go back to our story on how Samhain became Halloween. Pope Gregory I came into power, and as a result of his predecessor's efforts to wipe out pagan holidays such as Samhain, the Christians under Pope Gregory I succeeded in effecting the major transformations to do this. In 601 AD, the Pope Gregory I issued a now famous edict to his missionaries concerning the native beliefs and customs of the people that he hoped to convert. Rather than try to obliterate the native people's customs and beliefs, the Pope instructed the missionaries to use them. If a group of people worshipped a tree rather than cut it down, he advised them to consecrate it to Christ and allow the people to continue to worship it. So in terms of spreading Christianity, this was an amazingly brilliant concept, and it became a basic approach used in Catholic missionary work. Church holy days were purposely set to coincide with the native holy days. Christmas, for instance, was assigned the arbitrary date of December 25th, because it corresponded with the midwinter celebration, which would have been at the season change, the solstice, winter solstice of December 21st of many peoples. And that had to do with the King of the Sun and his son being born at that time. And it was that was the shortest day of the year, so they were welcoming the light back through the sun, through the infant sun. So it was very much a correspondence with the Nativity. Likewise, St. John's Day was set on the summer solstice, which would have been the two sun kings battling it out during the solstice. That was a legend, a pagan legend. So Samhain, with its emphasis on the supernatural, was decidedly pagan, while missionaries identified their holy days with those observed by the Celtic peoples. They branded the earlier religions' supernatural deities as evil and associated them with the devil. As representatives of the rival religion, the Druids were considered evil worshippers of devilish or demonic gods and spirits. The Celtic underworld inevitably became identified with the Christian hell. So this probably took the course of several hundred years, and then the mission was to try to obliterate the Druidic people completely, just the Druids, since they were the leaders, the spiritual leaders of these indigenous peoples. The effects of this policy were to diminish but not totally eradicate the beliefs in the traditional gods and goddesses. Celtic belief in supernatural creatures persisted, while the church made deliberate attempts to define them as being not merely dangerous but malicious. Followers of the old religion then went into hiding and were branded as witches. So the Christian Feast of All Saints was assigned to November 1st to kind of tie in the meaning of Halloween, Samhain. The day honored every Christian saint, especially those that did not otherwise have a special day devoted to them. This feast day was meant to substitute for Samhain, to draw the devotion of the Celtic and indigenous peoples, and finally to replace it forever. That did not happen, but the traditional Celtic deities diminished in status, becoming fairies or leprechauns of more recent traditions. So this took the course of, you know, many hundreds of years, but, you know, I think there's a reason why they call those middle centuries, like the 1100s, the 1200s, the 1300s, and so on, the Dark Ages, because there were many, many people that were still worshiping in the old ways, but they had to go into hiding because the religion at that time, that was the precedent religion, the number one religion, was Christianity, and most usually in its form as directed from Rome by the Pope, so it would have been Roman Catholic. And the old beliefs associated with Samhain never died out entirely. The powerful symbolism of the traveling dead was too strong and perhaps too basic to the human psyche to be satisfied with the new and more abstract Catholic feast honoring saints. Recognizing that something that would subsume the original energy of Samhain was necessary, the church tried again to supplant it with a Christian feast day in the 9th century. This time it established November 2nd as All Souls Day, a day when the living prayed for the souls of the dead. But once again, the practice of retaining traditional customs while attempting to redefine them had a sustaining effect. The traditional beliefs and customs lived on in new guises. So this is pretty much how we, you know, eventually got Halloween. And Halloween was associated with dead things, zombies, witches that were green. Witches that were burned at the stake were usually carried in carriages. And by that time, either they were half dead or dying, or they were killing them, not just by fire, but drowning. Dead bodies are always associated with the skin turning like a greenish-bluish color, kind of green, and hence we have the green witch that we see so often in commercial Halloween images. So we can look at the zombies and the ghosts and things like that that are all associated with our present-day Halloween, which really traces back to Samhain. So let's continue on with some music, and then I'll start talking about the associations and the different things that we see at Halloween time and where they came from. The Green Witch was just one thing, but there are so many others. So this is the Samhain song by Lisa Thiel. Was Lisa Seal, and she was doing a song, Samhain, the Samhain song. Great song. Love her acoustical music. So we're going to go into a little bit left of the history and then the associations. Many supernatural creatures became associated with All Hallows' Eve. In Ireland, fairies were numbered among the legendary creatures that roamed on Halloween. An old folk ballad called Alison Gross tells the story of how the fairy queen saved a man from a witch's spell on Halloween. All Saints' Day, which is November 1st in the Catholic religion, it's considered a feast day, otherwise known as All Hallows, hallowed meaning sanctified or holy, continued the ancient Celtic traditions. The evening prior to the day was the time of the most intense activity, both human and supernatural. People continued to celebrate All Hallows' Eve as a time of the wandering dead, but the supernatural beings were now thought to be evil. So the folk continue to propitiate these spirits and their masked impersonators by setting out gifts of food and drink. Subsequently, All Hallows Eve became a Hallow Evening, which became Halloween, *en*, an ancient Celtic pre-Christian New Year's Day in contemporary dress. There's also a thing that we have done in my household called the Dumb Supper, which is very interesting because you have an entire meal and dinner not speaking. And there is a plate left at the head of the table for the spirits. You're welcoming them to the table. And it is thought that when you do the Dumb Supper, that you will receive a message from a loved one that's gone on before. And that's the purpose of it, is just to be silent so you can take in that message. So it's a very interesting tradition. So we'll go over some of the other traditions. So let's talk about the jack-o'-lantern. Carved pumpkins are a mainstay of the Samhain season, and for some folks, the more elaborate the carving, the better. And I'm sure you've seen some of the really beautiful designs that have been made. A jack-o'-lantern typically holds a candle. You can also get those battery-powered tea lights, which you just have to tap on to turn off and tap on them again to, you know, turn them on. And that illuminates the carved out design. School children, younger ones are usually afraid of them, but it's really become quite a design. Some scholars have claimed that the idea of the hollowed out vegetable with a candle in the middle originated with the Celts. However, the Celts didn't have pumpkins, which are a North American plant. They did, however, have beets, turnips, and other root vegetables. So it's possible that there were other vegetables used, but also others think that the pumpkin carving started in Appalachia, which probably would have been started by the Germans or the Scottish Highlanders that ended up in isolated areas in the hills and mountains of Appalachia. In the early years of the United States. So it's almost impossible to know where exactly this traced from, but it's interesting to hear about the legends. Let's talk about black cats. Every year when people begin putting out Halloween decorations and we start to decorate our houses for Samhain, the image of the black cat comes up. And he's usually portrayed with the black back arched, claws out, and occasionally wearing a witch's hat. Of course, many people say don't let the black cat cross your path. You'll have bad luck. We know that the Scottish and the Irish consider a crossing of a black cat to be very auspicious and favorable. So, you know, I'm not sure where the fear came from. Divine cats were considered divine by the Egyptians, for instance, and there is a cat goddess, two cat goddesses, Bast and Sekhmet. And cats were also the so-called witches' familiar. And many people might have thought that was odd, an old woman who was considered a witch perhaps talking to her cat. And considered her a witch because of that. So cats really have come to us from so many different places as a traditional image at the Samhain time of year. Let me go on to another really great song. This is by, actually I'm trying to get past the commercial here on the audio, but this is Blackmore's Night, and actually this gentleman was a guitarist in Deep Purple, who now is in the pagan band Blackmore's Night, Ritchie Blackmore. So hope you enjoy this one.
Thank you.
So that was a wonderful song by Blackmore's Night, Fires at Midnight. And for those of you that don't know, that is Deep Purple's guitarist from back in the old hippie days, Ritchie Blackmore, who's been playing with Blackmore's Night, actually, for a number of years now. So he is doing some wonderful pagan music now. So let's go back to the associations. We have, as the young lady, our first caller, had mentioned, the Day of the Dead, celebrating the Day of the Dead, which is an association each year in Mexico and in many Hispanic communities around the United States and, you know, Central America and South America, not just with Catholic traditions, but with Candomblé and Santeria and other traditions, Haitian traditions as well. There is a Day of the Dead celebrated between October 31st and November 2nd. And while it may sound macabre, actually, it's a joyful celebration honoring the memories of those who have died in the past year. And today's Day of the Dead festivals are usually a blend of old Aztec tradition merged with modern Catholic beliefs. The original one usually took place in August, and it coincided with the migration of the monarch butterflies, and the Aztecs believed that the monarchs were the souls of the dead returning to their homes. After the Spanish conquest of Mexico, celebrations were moved to early November and blended the indigenous customs with the observance of the Christian holy days, again, for proselytization and to convert the indigenous peoples. And today, people of Mexican descent celebrate the Day of the Dead with picnics, elaborate altars, parades, and visits to the cemeteries. Altars include colored tissue ribbons, flowers, photos of the dead, and candles. And it's popular to include food, offerings with a theme of the dead, like sugar, skulls made out of sugar, and coffins, and small figures made of bread. So these are really, it's extremely colorful from what I've seen, and it looks like beautiful festivals, but they're really the same thing as Samhain. They're just celebrated in much more colorful fashion. So that's a wonderful association. We also have the Need Fire, which is really a symbol of these four fire festivals, which are Samhain and Beltane, and then we have Lugnasad, and we have Imbolc. So those are the four festivals on the Wheel of the Year that are celebrated by fire, and they're called fire festivals. So the legend of the Samhain Need Fire, in some areas of the Celtic lands, people believe that a special fire called the Need Fire would be used to create magical results. However, much like Harry Potter's Room of Requirement, the Need Fire could only be created in times of great need. In many areas, Samhain was seen as an opportune time for the Need Fire because the harvest was over, the earth was getting cold, and in winter, of course, the people were going to be thinking about starving and freezing. And the Need Fire helped to assure it was kind of an intention that your family would remain safe from famine, pestilence, and cold, and other natural disasters. In nomadic societies, the Need Fire was the place to make offerings. If you wanted to have a healthy crop of sheep, for example, you might carve an effigy of a ewe and toss it in the fire. Perhaps you'd throw some seeds in there to assure a crop or a good crop the following growing season. So the Need Fire was very important, and as I said before, in the villages they would put out all their fires, and during the ceremonies they would take the fire from the Need Fire and take it back to their individual homes. So all fires were started from that Need Fire. It was traditionally lit without the use of iron, so a Need Fire was done the old way with rubbing two sticks together. So very, very important in a fire festival is to be able to start your own fire with two sticks and actually create the need fire. So in many of these festivities, there are people designated just to be tending to the fire and making sure that people that are sitting around it remain safe as well. So wonderful, wonderful imagery of that. Another association, of course, and we see it everywhere in our Halloween decorations, are spiders. Depending on where you live, you probably see spiders starting to emerge from their hiding spots at some point in the summer. By fall, they tend to be fairly active because they're seeking warmth, which is why you may find yourself face-to-face with an eight-legged visitor. The patient that I'm working with now, she almost every single time I'm there, there's a spider in the house and nobody else can remove it but me. In the Hopi creation story, the spider woman is the goddess of the earth. Together with Tawa, the sun god, she creates the first living beings. In Greece, according to Greek legend, there was once a woman named Arachne who bragged she was the best weaver. And this didn't sit well with the goddess Athena, who was sure her own work was better. After a contest, Athena saw that Arachne's work was indeed of higher quality, so she angrily destroyed it. Despondent, Arachne hanged herself, but Athena stepped in and turned the rope into a cobweb and Arachne into a spider. So now Arachne can weave her beautiful tapestries forever, and her name is where we get the word arachnid. In Africa, the spider is portrayed as a trickster, much like the coyote in Native American stories. Called Anansazi, he is forever stirring up mischief to get the better of other animals. And in the Cherokee legend, that credits grandmother spider with bringing light to the world. So spiders were very, very, in most cases, very auspicious. When you think about them in the frame of reference of Halloween, they're just icky things that, you know, nobody wants to touch, nobody wants to be near. But I tend to think of them as good luck, and I like to take them, remove them out of my home, and put them in the garden. Spiders and magic is a whole, that's a whole different story. If you find a spider roaming around your home, it's considered bad luck to kill them. From a practical standpoint, they do eat a lot of nuisance insects, so if possible, just let them be or release them outside. So that's my fixer-upper. That's exactly what I do. Rosemary Ellen Guiley says in her Encyclopedia of Witches and Witchcraft in Wicca that in some traditions of folk magic, a black spider eaten between two slices of buttered bread will imbue a witch with great power. If you're not interested in eating spiders, some traditions say that catching a spider and carrying it in a silk pouch around your neck will help prevent illness. In some neo-pagan traditions, the spider web itself is seen as a symbol of the goddess and the creation of life. Incorporate spider webs into meditation or spell work relating to goddess energy. An old English folk saying reminds us that if we find a spider on our clothing, it means money is coming our way. In some variations, the spider on the clothes means simply that it's going to be a good day. Either way, don't disregard the message. So we have a song about Arachne and Athena. This is actually quite a beautiful song. It's called The Spiral Dance. I guess that's the band. The title is The Goddess and the Weaver. So this is all about Athena and Arachne. Okay, here goes. Hope you like it. She's on the loom on high. Great song. I absolutely love that song. And that is the Spiral Dance doing, let me get the title for you, The Goddess and the Weaver. Really great song. We had some wonderful stuff going on in the chat room, so I'm just going to reiterate some of the comments. Let me scroll back. We're talking about, Joanna had mentioned, that her Italian grandmother thought that black cats were evil. So I think the black cat legend being a positive, auspicious thing came from the northern parts of Europe for some reason, maybe the southern parts of Europe, because the Greeks didn't like the black cats either when I lived there. The other thing is, Joanne mentioned, if you look at it, all Christian holidays co-opted the symbols from other religions to gain acceptance. Easter, the bunny, which is a symbol of fertility, the tree, which was part of the Druid tradition, the birth of Jesus moved from his probable July birth to December to co-opt the Druid tradition. That's true. And then she mentioned the movie Coraline by director Tim Burton. It was a spider mommy kidnapping children to steal their souls. A great Halloween movie. And then dream catchers that we hang up actually at our windows that are supposed to control and help us in the dream time are supposed to be created spider webs. Josh mentions that his mom told him to never kill a spider in the house because grandmother's spider would come to get you. And Joanne had also mentioned the same thing that I mentioned, that there's no way that I've killed things for the sake of killing in the household. If there's an animal in the house, you just take it out of the house. But wonderful, wonderful comments. This has been a great show. I absolutely loved telling you all about the legends, traditions, what Samhain is all about, because it really has a bad rap when we look at just the commercial part of it. I'm going to end with a wonderful song, one of my favorites, by The Dead Can Dance. This is Kantara, and I want to wish you all a wonderful, wonderful Samhain holiday. Make sure you catch us at wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com. Hit us up on the GoFundMe link. And on your ever-questing thirst for knowledge, look up all you can about Samhain. I mean, this show is just the beginning of information. There's so much information on the web, and people should really be informed about what the holiday is about. So with that said, we'll see you next week, 10 o'clock, Friday night, here on Blog Talk Radio on the Here Be Monsters Network. And this is Dead Can Dance. Kantara.